The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I am your host, John Stadtmiller. It is Thursday, folks, 16th of January 2014 already. And on today's program, something a little bit different. And I've wanted to do this for quite some time. And I never could quite find the time, or couldn't, for whatever reason, didn't do this program that you're going to hear today. And the reason is in the last couple of days alone, there's been a lot of things that have just aligned and gave me greater understanding of history past. One of the most reviled periods of history concerns us and World War II. And that, I'm not going to go through the history of World War II today, but just to say that there is a lot of confusion out there. There's been a lot of propaganda. And there have been people that have taken the time to do endless hours of reading and research. And that is important. I've always, and maybe it was a bad analogy, maybe it was a good one, but I've always said in the past that if you have a problem, say you have a problem with your car, and it's making a funny noise, and you don't know what it is, and you can't fix it, and you take it to your mechanic, and he listens to it, and, oh yeah, I know exactly what that is. Well, maybe he doesn't, and maybe he just wants you to think so, so you spend your money looking for that problem that you and he both know that they're there. Well, in order to diagnose something, you have to be working with salient and real stuff in order to form an opinion or make a diagnosis. You know, I'm sure a lot of people out there don't know too much about, you know, mechanics or whatever, had problems with a car, and some of these stories are true. The women have gone into repair shops and, oh, lady, it's just your muffler bearings. You know, that's going to cost you $100 and we'll have it ready for you in an hour. What do they know? So it's important that people look at history past and get it right. One of the people that has done this on this network is Deanna Spingola. Deanna Spingola has a program on this network from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. Spingola Speaks. Deanna, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I couldn't be better. It's 70 degrees down here in Texas.
Oh, please.
Blue skies and not a chemtrail to be seen. And I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
Well, we are still freezing up here. I don't know exactly what the temperature is today, but it's too cold to go outside. We've had sub-zero. We've had 15 below. It's been terrible.
I used to live in that neck of the woods up there in Michigan, and I got to tell you, folks, you know, Chicago has a reputation as the Windy City.
Well, that's because of the politicians here.
Well, those Arctic blasts that come across the lake and hit in Chicago has something to do with it as well. But isn't that hot air down there? Shouldn't that raise the temperature?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, look, I wanted to have you on the program today, and what prompted my call to you today to get you on the air with me today is a couple of days ago, I'm on YouTube and I'm watching something, and everybody knows after the video's done, you know, there's a dozen other videos that pop up, and then there's the column on the side, and it leads you to other things. Well, I went on a little journey the other day, and what it was World War II German films, some of them in color, which you never hardly ever see. You never see any information out there except what the powers that be want to be released, or what the talking points are about World War II. And I'm in reference, obviously, here to controlled media inside this country, that, there's things that you talk about, and then there's the party line. And you pick up the party line, and you stay in line, otherwise you'll be, I don't know, you'll be bug bombed, or you'll be ostracized, or you'll just be disregarded and called a loony because, well, you're saying something that's contrary to what their propaganda has been all these years. Deanna, I spent in Germany back in the early 70s. I spent about a year over there. I was in the Army. I went over there. I was in Illesheim, Germany first, and I was a helicopter mechanic. Things were winding down, so they were shutting down some bases and some installations, and they shut my company down and moved me to Nuremberg, Germany. Well, in Nuremberg, I was housed in a German kaserne. That's what they used to call the billets for the German troops back in World War II. And they didn't change too much. They just occupied the buildings. And it was rather odd to be walking down these broad hallways and look up at the doorways and see Nazi insignias, cast Nazi insignias that were still there. There was this air of almost being surreal. And at the age of 18, Deanna, I wasn't worldly. I had bought the Kool-Aid and drank it like everybody else did. And I always had like a strange feeling, one of looking at this and going, oh, this is really creepy. But on the other hand, it was somehow, I don't want to use the term reassuring, but it was something for whatever reason I connected to. And I started to take an interest, and I started to look at the German people, and I started to talk to the older ones that were still alive at that time, that went through World War II, that had been there on the ground and seen it and heard it and lived it. And my attitude about the German people had changed. What I discovered about them is they were extremely hardworking people. They liked to drink. You know, everybody knows that. They have Oktoberfest. Deanna and I went to an Oktoberfest over there, my one and only time, and I was glad I had the opportunity to do it. 3,000 Germans sitting under a big tent, drinking schnapps and high-power beer, listening to the Oompa-Pa bands for 4, 5, 6 hours at a time, getting absolutely snockered, and not one argument or one fight. And I can tell you, in that year's time, I'd never seen two Germans going at it with each other with raised or angered voices. It was a different society, even back in the early 70s. And I'll say one other thing about my experience there. Sometimes I'd go off base and I'd still be in my fatigues, in my military uniform. And I'd hop the trolley on the and going to whatever Strasse, down to the Bahnhof or wherever. And every once in a while, I'd look up and I'd see an old person looking out of the side of their face at me. And when I'd look at them, they'd turn away. And I could read what was on their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was heart-wrenching. And one of the questions that one of these people asked me one day, and spoke pidgin English, but they asked me, and I understood, and I answered the question. They asked me, why are you still here? Referring to me being in the military after so many years, after the war being over. Basically, why are you still occupying our country, and we are still there? When we get back from the break, Deanna, I want to pick it up from there. Do a little bit of history, true history, ladies and gentlemen, about Germany during those years prior and then after. Deanna Spingola is my guest. We'll take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Yeah, Deanna, as I said to you prior to the program today, I watched about two and a half hours of film that was actually shot by the Germans during World War II. And it was the most complete thing that I had ever seen on what was going on in Germany. And basically, it was centered around the technological stuff. And people, a lot of things, as I said, fell into place. Everybody's seen the movie Memphis Belle. And this was a story about airmen that had to fly daylight bombing missions in Germany. And the English were doing it at night. Well, it was a lot safer during the nighttime hours than it was during the day. You were a visible target to fighters. They could see you. The AK-AK guns would go off. And we lost a lot of people. But I never understood why they did such drastic measures. You know, the war was going pretty well. We were going to win. The Russians were on our side. And, well, there wasn't anything going to stop us from smashing Germany. Well, little did I realize how technologically advanced these people were. And after the war, I'll just add this, after the war, there was a lot of stuff taken out of Germany. A lot of the technology that they had built, the Russians got what the Americans wanted to leave behind or didn't think that was that necessary. And everything always centered around the V-2 rocketry and the Von Braun, Redstone projects and all these other things. But that's about as far as it went. You got to see German piston fighters, and that was about it. But they never talked about how really advanced Germany was technologically.
And that has always been the case from the 1800s forward. And the war, World War II, was really an extension of World War I. And it started even before that. It started in 1848 with the Bolshevik revolutions, the Marxist revolutions in Europe. And Germany was always a target because, for several reasons, culturally, economically, technologically, religiously. There's supposed to be one specific tribe that was to bless the world with its genius. And I've always felt that it was the Germans. And they love work, and they love work not for what it brings to them, but because that is just their characteristics, that they're not looking or trying to acquire wealth. They just love to work, to produce, and they're very, very good at it. And culturally, they were the first country in Europe that recognized, and I hate to bring this up early on in the program, but it's a fact of life, but culturally they were one of the very first countries in Europe to recognize the dangers of the Jewish people within their society. And they had a meeting in Dresden on September 11th and 12th in 1882, in which they gathered together several other European nations to decide what they were going to do about the Jewish issue. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that the reason that they destroyed Dresden, since it wasn't a military target, since it was it was one of the most beautiful cities in Europe, and yet without any military targets, and because it was a refugee city where a lot of people went to because they thought they would be safe, they destroyed it, I believe, because of a revenge issue. Because that was where the first meeting was on September 11th, 1882.
September 11th. I'm sure out of 365 or 64 shots at that was just a coincidence.
Sure.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't understand. And we have gotten the propaganda through the, should we say, biased media in this country on that subject.
Sure.
We have people that are still telling the world, and now they've set it up that they can throw you in jail if you disagree with their rendition of history, and specifically about 6 million Jews being killed in Nazi Germany. It was never, ever, 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 ever to that amount of 6 million people. And Hitler himself, gave the Jews. He finally figured out what the, as you said, the problem. Now, keep in mind, they've been thrown out of, what, 85, 86 different countries, Deanna?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they have been thrown out of 70-something countries 109 times. And it's not because there was something wrong with the people in the countries. It was because there was something wrong with the way that the Jews were behaving in those countries. And they never get around to quite looking at what the problem is, that it's them, that they need to change their behavior. And as you said, it is against the law to question or to say anything negative about the Jews or about Israel in at least 16 countries. And it's really politically incorrect to talk about them in this country. And they also have a worldwide anti-Semitic legislation that they're trying to impose that was put into place by George W. Bush. I believe it was in 2005. It was the global anti-Semitic legislation, which they are trying to get imposed upon the whole world. Now, if you can't talk about somebody, if it's against the law to talk about a particular group of people, you got to ask why.
And I more than understand that. I've talked about that very issue on this broadcast many, many different times. And going back to World War II and prior to that, what Hitler figured out was that he had a bunch of people that were just serving as middlemen, that were not producing anything. They weren't generating wealth. They were just simply absorbing or making a buck off of other people's labors before it got to the end product or consumer, let's just say.
Sure.
He also recognized another problem in the banking system as well.
Right.
Go ahead.
Part of the NSDAP program, which was written in 1920, was a program that talked about immigration, and he wanted to. There were in between the wars, there were a lot of people, a lot of Jews came in from the east, came in from Poland. And they used other people's money, rich Jews here in this country. They used a lot of other people's money to pick up property assets between the wars, because the Germans were just devastated by World War I. And here these Jews with money came into the country in order to pick it off, to pick up property for pennies on the dollar. And that's what they did. And so part of the program included a stipulation that, and this was written in 1920, I gotta find the date, February 24th was the publication of the NSDAP program. And it said that anybody that immigrated after, I think it was August 14th, 1914, would have to leave, which was reasonable. And it was very reasonable. And there were other stipulations. The whole NSDAP program was designed to put the German first and to put the immigrant last, because these were guests in the country. They were residents.
You mean what we're not doing in this country right now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The U.S. government, of course, is giving all of these entitlements to immigrants, allowing them to vote and allowing them to practice law in certain states without a license, allowing them to take jobs that nobody else would take, and all kinds of things. And that was not allowed in Germany. And the problem, as I mentioned, did not begin with Hitler, but he recognized the problem and he wanted to address it. And within months, just a couple months after he came into power, the Jews declared war, economic warfare, against Germany.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Take this break. Pick it up in 3 minutes. My guest today, Deanna Spingola, and I'm having fun doing this, folks, because history past, history is history. It depends on who's telling you those historic facts. And remember, those that don't like the truthsayers, they like to hang them. All right, we are back talking with Deanna Spingola today. And Deanna, the propaganda machine is still in place today.
Oh, even worse. It's even worse. I mean, we still have Hollywood producing movies. If you look at all the propaganda movies about Germany, just about the Holocaust, we're talking probably around 300 movies. And so I think that the reason that they are ramping up is because people are starting to look at what really happened. And so they have to counter this.
Well, and there's just a new movie due to be released. I think it may already be in theaters. I don't remember the name, but it was Nazi Germany and all the treasures, and and I'm like,
right.
All the spoils of war and what was stolen, and I'm like, oh gosh, here we go again. And the problem is that in order to have an adult conversation about this. And it's hard for some people to do that because they've been propagandized. They have been enmeshed in this. As I stated, I was 19 years old. I was a little bit tickled and a little bit scared. And all the thoughts were going through my head about being in Germany. I'm going, oh my gosh, the evil lair of that. Well, it turns out that was not the case. Now, Adolf Hitler took power as chancellor, what, in 1933?
He was selected chancellor in January 30th, 1933. And because he had the most popular party, his party had more seats in the Reichstag than any other party. He actually should have been chosen chancellor months earlier, because that was the procedure. That was the way it should have been, because he did have his party had more people in the Reichstag than any other party.
And coming out of World War One, I mean, the Weimar Republic, and everybody has heard the stories. Economically, they referred to the Weimar Republic as being like the early days of or a repeat, say, of Zimbabwe. In other words, they had hyperinflation in Germany, and we've all heard the stories of the wheelbarrows for a loaf of bread. And if you went into a restaurant, the price on the menu, by the time you finished your meal in that restaurant, the price had literally changed and gone up. So Germany was in the throes of an economic depression, the likes that nobody else on this planet was going through. I mean, we had our depression here in the United States. And the bankers saw fit to make that last about 10, 11 years until, we have an opportunity to make some money. Let's open up the credit lines and yippee, we're all going to war. And I always refer to World War II as being World War I, Part II.
Sure. Well, right at the end of World War II, or World War I, the British had embargoed Germany. And the only reason that they agreed to sign the Versailles Treaty, the reason that the Germans were compelled to sign the Versailles Treaty, is because even after the armistice on November 11th, 1918, the embargo stayed in place, and thousands upon thousands upon thousands of German citizens starved to death in the 9 months until June 28th, I believe it was June 28th, 1919. And then they lifted the embargo. And so this was a tragic, tragic thing. And we refer to the November criminals, the ones that signed the armistice, and a couple of those were Jews. And it was the Jews that took power and in the Weimar government and took over the government. And, of course, they were in bed with the international Jews, and they were all about signing the Dawes Pact, which would enable the bankers here in this country to loan huge sums of money to Germany. And Hitler was against that and pleaded for the people not to accept the Dawes Plan. And, of course, that was replaced in 1929 by the Young Plan. And of course, after World War II, we had another plan where certain corporations would be able to go into Germany and rebuild and get paid gobs of money And it's all about making money. You go in and you destroy a country, you bomb the smithereens out of it, and then you go in and you loan the country some money to rebuild and charge, and the corporations that were involved, it was called, under the Marshall Plan, the corporations that were involved, overcharged the Germans. I mean, it was just absolutely terrible.
So it was like, of course, it was like carrion crows picking over a corpse.
Sure. Well, and it's what's going on in Iraq today and what's going on in Afghanistan. And you said that the Germans, that one German asked you, why are you still here? Yeah. Well, for the same reason that we're still in Japan and Korea and Vietnam and in the Philippines. In fact, this big horrible storm. They wanted the United States out of the Philippines, and what do you know? There's a big storm, and, well, we're still there. but that's probably another story for another time.
I'll tell you what, during the course of the program today, I want to intersperse this with some calls, so I don't want to leave people in queue here just hanging in the wind.
Sure.
Let me go to Kent in West Virginia. You're up, Kent. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, John and Deanna.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, the interesting, a few minutes ago you were talking about how you can't talk about the Jews and everything, and I just thought I'd put on the airwaves, RBN airwaves, a story that's going on in France, but apparently it's not being talked about here in the United States. But there's a French comedian, and I'll spell his name, it's D-I-E-U-D-O-N-N-E. D-I-E-U-D-O-N-N-E, Diodonne. And he has caused quite a real sensation in Europe and France in particular, and because, like, a gesture that he's making, and he's been using it as sort of an up yours type of gesture, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden the Jews have taken it as to being anti-Semitic. And he's a very popular comedian, and they've driven him. They've driven him off the stage. They've hounded him, and your listeners might want to check that out and read up on that and find out what's going on. I mean, he's just being persecuted like no end. So
and Deanna, we've got a laundry list of people we can mention here that went against the revised history and the numbers corrections that have been made, and this Holocaust industry that's been put in place. And you said it before, Deanna, you know, in a world that it's supposed to be, you're supposed to be able to learn anything that you want to learn. If you want to put in the time, you want to do the studies, you want to form your own opinions, you should be able to do that based on facts, not hearsay, not somebody else's regurgitation or revision of history. You should be able to research that and talk about it as adults. But we have groups of people, and I say this, and I mean this sincerely, the only people that hate this sort of thing, and this is the only kind of hate I can see here, is when they hate the truth being exposed. And anybody that doubts that, has your government told you, our government, I hate to say our government, but have they told us one shred of truth about the Middle East?
Of course not.
No, and they're not going to. So, you know, it's a dangerous thing to do, to go in there. And on this radio broadcast, there's no subject taboo. I will discuss these issues, and I do it in a way that it's set in a proper context. And the reason you're here today, Deanna, is because you've done all this research. You didn't go in with the attitude of saying, well, I'm just going to pick my and make my opinion here known, and then I'm going to go pick some facts here to support my contentions. You went through the history in fine detail and pulled everything apart and looked at it all, and you've come to your conclusions that I am not going to sit here, not for one moment, and argue with your viewpoint here, because it's been spot on.
Well, truth should not fear investigation. And that is the Jews, as Kent mentioned. They are very concerned that people are looking at them, and that's why it's illegal. Because in so many countries, for people not to be able to discuss the Jews or ask questions or even ask the number of the so-called Holocaust victims or anything like that. And people have gotten arrested. They've been deported from this country. And I'm talking about Ernst Sundel, who married and came to this country, went to Tennessee. And the Canadian government worked with the American government and quickly got him deported. And that was after two trials up in Canada in 1985, 1988, in which he proved, absolutely proved in court, the facts about, well, there wasn't a Holocaust, people. It did not happen.
All right, let's take the break here. Ken in Virginia, West Virginia rather, thanks for your call. We'll continue our discussion today with Deanna Spingola right after this.
This is Dr.
With the limits of ambition and the scars of the marketplace. Welcome to the land of flame and fizz, where you will
learn. We are back, and folks, we've had to extend out the pledge drive for the network. Didn't want to do it, but I warned people that if the donations didn't come in fast enough, and as time passes, well, time waits for no man, trying to hold back the hands of time, and it's only going to rip your arms out. But to run a network, bills have to be paid, and these people do not wait. They want cash for their services. If you don't pay, you don't play. So I had to extend this out for a little while, and we've added something to this. For the pledge drive for the network, for $100 donation, for $100 donation, you'll get one of the fine mugs. If you've not seen our logo, well then, I don't know what you've been looking at, but we have t-shirts and a mug that we're giving people for $100 donation. But also I added something a little bit different, and it's been quite popular with people. 1 ounce silver rounds, and if you go to the website and click on that banner, that rotating banner at the top in the news story section, it'll take you to a page that you can donate. Our address is up there if you want to send a check or money order or cash wrapped in aluminum foil. We're not particular. You can do so, or you can make a PayPal donation. But we've added 25 one-ounce copper rounds, and they're the Republic of Texas rounds. One nation under God, Republic of Texas on one side, and on the other, the Battle of San Jacinto. I don't reference the Alamo that much, because that was the start. San Jacinto was the finish. So, at any rate, 25 copper rounds, 1 ounce rounds, they're beautiful rounds for a donation of $100. Please, ladies and gentlemen, right now, pick up the phone, it won't take you that long. Dial 800-724-2719. Talk to Julie, make a donation, or go up to that rotating banner, click it on, it'll give you all the information. And please make the donation. Folks, I can guarantee you one thing. I can promise you one thing, that on any other established network out there, you're not going to hear programming like you're hearing today, that's for sure. And for those that want to hide from the truth or want to shy away from it because, well, it's a little bit uncomfortable, well, then are we really cut out? And are we the people we think that we are? And are we going to be brave and bold in their brave new world? Or are we just going to fold up like a cheap suit and go quietly in the night? I, for one, I choose the former and not the latter. And I'm sure you do as well, Deanna.
I do, absolutely.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. Brian in Boston. Hello, Brian. How you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hi, John. Hi, Deanna.
Hi.
Hi.
John, I just wanted to say that every day between 12 and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I attend class at Spingola University, and Professor Spingola re-educates me, and I'm so grateful for Deanna and all her research. She's the best on IBN, John. Nothing to you, but she's the best on IBN. Thank you for having her on there.
Well, Brian, I'm not going to admonish you. It doesn't matter if I'm first or I'm 10th. I appreciate that you like the programming on the network, and it is informative to you. That's the whole point of this.
No, she's first class. She is, and she's the best researcher I've ever seen, and she brings the factual stuff, and she's not afraid. She has the bees of you and Michael Rivera put together.
I'm sorry, I missed the last point.
I said she has the bees of you and Michael Rivera put together.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, Brian. Thank you. I appreciate your call. And
thank you.
Somebody in your hometown here, Deanna. Jerry in Chicago. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, John. Deanna knows I call her show quite a bit.
Yes.
Hey, I wanted to mention something. Deanna, you said something before the last break, something about truth deserves investigation or something
truth?
Of that nature.
Truth does not fear investigation. In other words, we should be able to investigate anything. Because if it's true, people need to know it. And nobody should put a lid on our investigative efforts.
Well, if you happen to notice over the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years maybe, every time they come up with something, that the agenda is pushed and everything that's questioned becomes national security or a big secrecy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the crap I am mad about. And if they were honest with us, I got to tell you, you know what? Open the book. Same thing with Obama's birth certificate.
Right.
It goes on year after year. And people are so brainwashed and they don't see this. And it's right in front of their face.
Sure.
Oh, it aggravates me. But anyway, John, ditto to the last caller, because Deanna has great guests, everything else like that, and everybody learns from her show. My sister-in-law listens to her show. My sister-in-law is 60, and she loves her. And she wasn't awake to this stuff until April of last year. So you got a hell of a thing going. Keep it up. God bless you, and I'm going to try and get another donation in the mail real soon.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, the thing that people have got to understand. Let me ask you just some quick fire questions here, Deanna. Who's behind the One World Order? Who's behind the grand plans for this?
Well, if you look at the protocols of what I call the lurid elders of Zion, you'll see the whole blueprint. And they have said, back in 1949, I'd have to look in my timeline. I've got a timeline up where I pretty much time everything out for what happens, what happened when. I love timelines. They're just like a map.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can look, for instance, in 1933. Look at all the things that happened in 1933. And it's just amazing how many things happened, how many things came together, and what people were doing. But they have been very open about who is behind this. They brag about it. They tell you this is what we're going to do, and then they do it. And they put it in the newspaper. I mean, there was a gentleman, Greenberg, who said the New World Order, he didn't say it quite this way, but he said it was the Jews were in charge of it. Plain and simple.
Yeah,
they were in charge.
I've seen the very same things, and I've seen those very same quotes. Well, let me ask you this. Who's behind the push for world communism?
The Jews. The Bolsheviks were predominantly Jewish. They got Jewish money from New York. They trained in the Rockefeller compound. There were 200 or 300 Jews from the Lower East Side that trained there. Then they went on a ship over to Russia. And they took over. And the reason they took over is because, they didn't have guns. They were vulnerable. The Russians were vulnerable. It was at the end of World War I. People were starving. They were hungry. And, of course, that's always a good environment for Marxists. for because they promise, they make all these promises, same kinds of promises that the government here is making right now. And poor people, people who've lost their homes, people who are in foreclosure, they're the prime target.
Well, and a lot of people do not understand, and they'll hear this propaganda and they'll watch the History Channel, and you're looking at a distorted and preferential view, let me put it to you that way, of World War II in that era. Hitler did not want to go to war with the United States.
Of course not.
He did not want to go to war with England, and he did not want to go to war with Russia.
No.
And a lot of people do not understand that. I mean, when you tell people, when the British soldiers hit Dunkirk and they realized that they were trapped, it was actually came on from on high and through his generals. They told the British hierarchy, look, get your people out of here and get them out now, and allowed them to withdraw. Many people...
There were some logistical things, too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take the break here. TJ in Georgia, John, Sherry, Jerry, we'll get to all of your calls. My guest today, Deanna Spingola. Spingola Speaks, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on this network, and that's Central Standard Time. We'll take the break. We'll be back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll continue this. Everybody that's in queue on the phone, hang in there. We'll get to your calls immediately, right after the top of the hour break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the National Intel Report on this Thursday, 16 January 2014. My guest, Deanna Spingola. And Deanna, I can't get used to saying 2014 any more than I was comfortable saying 2013 or 2012. Somebody has hit the fast forward on the VCR of life here, I think.
I think you're right. I guess what they say about having a lot of fun, time passes quickly. I don't know.
I don't know. In the morning, in the evening, ain't we got fun? Yeah.
Yep.
TJ in Georgia, you're up next. Go ahead, TJ.
Hey, John. Hey, Deanna.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for this topic, because we have been the victims of revisionist history when it comes to the Jewish thing. What a lot of people don't realize is, you know, back in the day, I believe it was 1935, Hitler put a bunch of Jewish people on an actual cruise ship and sent them over to the United States. The United States refused them. That cruise ship then went to Cuba. And I think maybe a few family members got off there. And then nobody else would take them, and it was sent back to Germany. And that's where they ended up. What a lot of people don't realize is people back then knew how they were and what they did to all, you know, all different colonies and kingdoms. You know, for thousands of years. And another thing is, even if you believe the numbers from World War II, the people in the Nazi camps, the concentration camps, whatever, there were still more Poles killed than Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jewish people are pretty much usurping, you know, the Polish people suffering.
Well, and, I mean, there was a reason for people to be killed in the camps, and the deaths occurred in the latter part of the war, right before May 8th, when Germany unconditionally surrendered. And the reason that they surrendered was because of the horrific bombing. People were starving to death. And the reason that the people were dying in the camps was because of the Allied bombing. Because the United States Air Force dropped 1,463,423 tons of bombs on Germany. They destroyed every single city that had over 50,000 residents. Now, the Royal Air Force dropped 1,307,117 tons. Together, that makes up I can't do the math real quick. But they destroyed 33% of Berlin, except they didn't destroy the Jewish hospital in the middle of Berlin. Everybody got through just fine. They had all the food that they wanted. The camps the people in the camps died from typhus, from all of the diseases that come with starvation, because the Allies destroyed all the communication lines and people got hungry. And it wasn't just the people in the camps who had this problem, who were starving, it was the residents. So, and of course I'd like to blame this on the Germans. And meanwhile, as early as 1943, the Eisenhower had several hundred thousand prisoners, German prisoners, and he had them in camps. He put them in boxcars and hauled them to the camps. He ultimately had 200 enclosures. I'm not even going to call them camps. He had 200 enclosures. They were just barbed wire enclosures, and people were infirmary, no hospital, no barracks, no nothing. It was just open fields. And at least 1.5 million Germans starved to death in Eisenhower's death camps. And that was deliberate.
And this is the kind of thing that we never hear. These things, we never hear these things.
And it's very unfortunate.
It is. TJ, anything else, sir?
I was fortunate enough, my father bought me, I think it was a Time Life books. Encyclopedias, actually. And there was 24 of them. We got one every month. And this is back in the early 80s. And what I found interesting was the very last book was nothing but... It was all about World War II from start to finish. The very last book was nothing but propaganda posters by every nation, from New Zealand, Australia, Germany, Russia, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found interesting was how ugly the German posters were, you know, in relation to the Jews. And I'm like, there is no way they could be that over the top if there was not reason. Now, you know, in being that I studied that, I know, you know, what the German people were doing with the monetary units and all that, it almost seems justified. Because if you just sit there and if the government puts out things like if our government did this, black people and put them in a monkey state or whatever, or you know, whatever. What the German propaganda did, or media, whatever you want to call it, the posters at that time, because that's how they communicated, you know, Uncle Sam wants you here in the United States, they made them look extremely ugly, and I think they would have lost complete credibility if they would have, you know, if that wasn't true. So, anyway, thank you very much for taking my call. I really love the show.
Okay, thank you, TJ. I appreciate your call. Yeah, we hit upon this lightly, Deanna, at the start of the broadcast today. We're talking about German technology. And as I said, after watching about, I don't know, two and a half hours of this film footage that was unedited and it was in many cases raw footage explaining the technologies that were in Germany, if this war would have lasted one more year. Now, Oppenheimer and the boys, we already created the atomic bomb. That's what we dropped in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And ironically, that was the two largest collections of Christian Japanese. We're all supposed to be one under God here, but evidently not with the people in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But Hitler was about 6 months to a year away from developing the atomic bomb themselves. We've heard about the heavy water experiments, and that's about all that you hear about. And this was amazing that when I watched this and I started to think and things started to drop like tumblers on a safe, you know, just click, 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 click. All of a sudden, what came to mind, I mentioned it, was that movie Memphis Belle and how these guys flying these bombing missions, they had life expectancies of houseflies. And you were, after 25 missions, flying over flak-filled Germany, if you lived that long, guess what? You rotated out of that role and you didn't have to do any more bombing missions. But the English and the Americans realized the technological advantage that Germany had. And if they wouldn't have put this war to an end in 45, we'd be eating sauerbraten right now and toasting German beer, folks. Trust me on this one. But who did we team up with? And we're still dealing very, very nicely with is the communists.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
All right, we are back. I was talking about the technology, and folks, hang on, people in queue here, we'll get to your calls. Deanna, some of the things that I had seen, and I was real excited to get you on air because I know you're the go-to person on the history, World War I, World War II, Europe, specifically Germany, and who played what role and who was doing the dirt and who wasn't and who was lying about it.
Sure. I don't know which YouTube videos that you saw, but in 1935, Germany and Britain signed the Anglo-German Naval Agreement, under which Germany voluntarily agreed to restrict her naval capacity to just 35% of what Britain possessed. Whatever technology that Germany was developing was primarily for the use of the people in Germany. The war that they were fighting was a defensive war. They were not preparing to make war, to make aggressive warfare. In fact, they were trying to, the whole time that this was going on, from 1933 on, Germany, Hitler attempted to ally with Britain, and Britain rebuffed every single appeal that Germany made. And it's just, they were simply not preparing for warfare. Yeah. On the other hand, the United States and Britain were both preparing for warfare. And this was before Pearl Harbor. I mean, we're talking in 1936 that Britain was manufacturing bombs. The United States was manufacturing bombs. Germany would never have bombed the United States, ever.
And let me throw something in there. The technology that they were developing, they were the first people, and it wasn't Boeing folks back in the 40s and the 50s that came up with the flying wing aircraft. Everybody remembers seeing the pictures of those, and they were prop-driven, and then they decided, well, they're not powerful enough. Let's add jet engines. Well, it was the Germans that developed rocketry. They developed the ramjet. They developed the jet engines. And they had actually, and they had tested the flying wing, prop-driven, and then added jets to it. And this was well into, they were testing it into 1944. And this is after we had been at war with Germany for how many years now? And they had actually made plans and said, okay, well, when we develop the bomb, you know, we've tried our best here to keep not locking horns with the United States, but, well, they came to, the story goes that they came to England's defense. They did the lend-lease with Russia and gave them what technologies. They didn't steal or rob from other people. And we made the grand kickoff for the communist to be the, well, the world's boogeyman as of today.
Sure.
And if there wouldn't have been that Bolshevik Revolution, world communism wouldn't have been an issue. It wouldn't have been in existence. So,
well, if the Jews in this country and Wilson, well, Wilson sent them $10 million, and he was all for them. And it was because of his, the people that he had advising him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrible. Edward Mandel House, and you had Bernard Baruch. And those people were the ones that were promoting World War One, promoting the entry of the United States into World War One. And then, of course, you had the Balfour Declaration.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this was very orchestrated
very, very interesting. This flying wing, once they put the jet engines on it and they fueled the thing up, it had a range of over 7,000 miles, and it was capable of dropping an atomic bomb. They had plans, if necessary, to bomb New York. A lot of people don't know that the mayor of New York City, LaGuardia at the time, they had AK-AK guns and machine guns on skyscraper tops, well, skyscrapers of the day in New York City. And it wasn't anything that, as we stated, that Adolf Hitler wanted to do. He didn't want to lock horns with the United States. I mean, this is like walking into a bear cave with meat spread all over you and going, okay, Mr. Bear, I just want to sleep here. Just ignore the fact that I smell like a victim here. It's most fascinating thing. Anyhow, let's go back to the phones, and I want to leave you fine folks holding. Sherry in Kansas. Hello, Sherry.
Hi, John. Hi, Deanna. John, Deanna is my favorite program, too. And I also like Darren Week's show, and now I'm so glad you got Dr. Daniels.
She is a firecracker. I chose her because of her stubbornness to cave and her willingness to fight.
Deanna, that was an excellent show you did a couple weeks ago on genocide, and that'd be one, I think, you know, if you want to take a day off to replay. Personally, I thought that one was great. I was wondering if off the cuff you could talk a little bit about anything you learned about the Frankfurter School, like the influence it's had on our universities and also on psychiatry, psychology, and philosophy.
Oh, goodness.
Is that a loaded question, Deanna?
And I'll hang up. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, I talked about psychiatry yesterday and some of the medications, and of course they want the whole world to be on a psychiatric medication so that they can control us better. And again, you're looking at a Jewish construct. This was all started by the Jews, and but I don't know too much about the Frankfurt School. I really don't. So
okay, Sherry, there you go. Hey, by the way, Deanna, my mentor, somebody that grabbed a hold of me and said, look, you and I need to have a conversation. He sat down for about 8 hours with me. His name was Jack Otto. He did a book called World War III. I don't know, have you ever read that?
No.
I'll have to send you a copy of this. And I was after Jack to do this, and he'd been working on it for 20 years. Well, Jack Otto had passed away, and but he was able to put that book out. And it is some of the most fascinating reading. Like yourself, he was a researcher, and he was researching for some 20 years. And I finally convinced him. I said, look, Jack, take the time. You know, accumulation of knowledge is fine for your own benefit, but until you compile that and put it down on paper and then share it, you're lacking here. You're missing the whole point, I believe. And he did exactly that. So I'll make sure that you get a copy of Jack Otto's book, World War III.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's rather fascinating. I think you'll find it useful. Let's go back to the phones. Jerry in Illinois. Not the same Jerry, is it?
No, it's not. And I'm heading towards Wheeling, Indiana, and I'm 90 miles out. Why am I doing a 5-mile-an-hour?
I don't know. Why are you?
I don't know. I'll have to ask the 10,000 people in front of me.
Okay.
I used to have a sedan service, and my Jewish customer was much more pleasant than my Jesuit customer. But my question is, who, because I was trained to believe the prison camps, who were the people in the camps wearing the star thing on their shoulders?
Okay, well, we can get back to that when we come back from the break. But okay. There was a definite reason for the camps.
Okay, Jerry, hang on a second, because I think I already know what she's going to say, but this is Deanna Spingola that's my guest this afternoon. We'll rely on her information to answer that question, and we'll do that right after this break. Jerry's question about two of those guys running around in the camps with those stars on.
Right. Okay. On February 22nd, 1933, in anticipation for the March 5th elections in Germany, Alfred Cohn, the president of B'nai B'rith, held a special meeting in New York with 15 of the most prominent Jewish leaders in order to plan how to wage war against Germany. The American Jewish Congress advocated public protest in America and elsewhere to demonstrate against the German government. On March 12, 1933, the American Jewish Congress leadership again met for 3 hours to plan a national program of highly visible protest, parades, and demonstrations. Jewish people and organizations elsewhere, including in Germany, begin conspiring against the National Socialist government in order to destroy it. So, in response, on March 21st, 1933, Munich Police Chief Heinrich Himmler, in a press release, said, on Wednesday the 1st, concentration camp will be opened in Dachau with an accommodation for 5,000 persons. All communist and, where necessary, Reichsbanner and social democratic functionaries who endanger state security are to be concentrated here, as in the long run, it is not possible to keep individual functionaries in the state prisons without overburdening those prisons. And on the other hand, these people cannot be released because attempts have shown that they persist in their efforts to agitate and organize as soon as they are released. Now, most of these agitators I mentioned were people. There was a lot of Jews that came in from the East, came in from Poland to agitate to destroy National Socialism, and so they decided that they needed to detain them. And so that's the first camp that was opened. And if you have what is considered an enemy within your country that has decided, has made their intentions known to destroy you, then you're going to have to do something. Now, in September 1936, FDR asked J. Edgar Hoover, who was the director of the FBI, to initiate, a clandestine 5-year plan, which included identifying in a list potential security risk among American citizens and legal residents. And so Roosevelt exceeded his authority, and he got some support from numerous political Latin American republics, and he decided that he was going to start rounding up Germans in Central and South America, which he did. And how they did that is they obligated those Latin Americans to a compulsory consultation with the U.S. government in the event of any external attack. In other words, what they also did is said, okay, if you don't do this, you're going to have trouble. And so they, on June 26, 1939, FDR, and remember, this is before the war. The war officially started in Europe on September 1, 1939, when Germany responded to the numerous Polish sorties that were flying over. They were responding to Polish aggression.
And that was, and that turned into the clawing back, for lack of a better term, Sudetenland that was given up after World War I, correct?
Sure, that was part of it. But yeah. But they got that back before then. What Hitler was trying to do was just reverse some of the stipulations of the Versailles Treaty, which they took away. Well, they took away a lot of land, yeah. A lot of where Germans had lived for generations.
Yeah.
And so he was just trying to reverse that treaty. But Poland was also, they were making invasions, and they were also, killing a lot of the people, a lot of the Germans, taking away their land, and had been since 1921. And the Germans living in Poland were discriminated against. They changed their land laws, and it was just horrible to live in Poland if you were German. Mm. But anyway, I mean, So what the U.S. government was doing by 1939, by June of 1939, they had created an intelligence agency for espionage in Latin America, under the FBI, the Military Intelligence Division, and the Office of Naval Intelligence, and they went throughout Central and South America and gathered up Germans who had been living there and deported them to camps in the United States. Mm. And some of these people were German citizens, or U.S. citizens.
No. Fascinating. Jerry, did that answer your question?
Yeah, John, it at least begs the question, because you said another year we'd be speaking German. It makes me wonder, well, considering what we have today, which is the least painful, the Nazism, communism, or U.S.ism,
well,
or
and let me just interject here, Deanna. Jerry, what should have been done, and Patton said it succinctly, and you recognize that Patton didn't make it out of World War II alive. What he wanted to do once he was tasked with his job in Europe, as far as Germany was concerned, what he recognized was the bigger threat, and had been before Germany. I mean, Patton was a pretty smart guy. He didn't just study, you know, military things and logistics and, you know, how to do tank battles and whatever else. This guy was a student. He was more than a student of history. That's the one thing that the Patton movie got correct. He thought that he was somehow reborn, and he had lived many other lives as commanders in various militaries. But the one thing that he recognized, that was siding with the communists that managed to kill 50 million of their own people in real death camps. He said, look, he says, you give me the fuel, you give me the tanks, you give me what I need, and we'll put this communist question to bed. And we'll walk out of Europe the right way. And that did not happen. We sided with Uncle Joe over there. We gave them everything that they needed. We helped and promoted communism. We let them take whatever they took after World War II, and here we sit today. And the biggest threat in my mind against our way of life, yes, the globalists and their grand plan, but who they're working through, and that's the communist and the socialist. And that would have never been. You and I, my friend, would be living in a totally different world. Totally different than what you're seeing today.
And there's another thing, too. A lot of people think that that Hitler and Germany, they just went out and they rounded up all of these Jews. That is just not true. Many of the Jews who were not agitators, who were not communists, who had not declared war against Germany, remained in their homes and throughout the war. So it's just a fallacy.
So Cyclone B, killing people, gassing them, whatever?
You couldn't kill people with Cyclone B. That was a gas that was designed to kill lice. And they were fumigating the clothes because lice in any war and typhus in any war, whether you're talking about Civil War in America or World War I, that is the biggest killer in warfare, is the disease. Not getting shot.
Yeah. What about all these famous pictures of the ovens with skeletons laying in them?
Well, the ones in Auschwitz, were designed after. Well, you know, you had a crematorium because if people are going to die and they're dying of diseases, you got to get rid of the bodies in a sanitary way. But as far as the gas ovens, there's no such thing as a gas oven. There were chambers where they did fumigate the clothes. But the chimney at Auschwitz was built by the Soviets because they are the ones that so-called liberated Auschwitz on January 27th, 1945. And there was no Holocaust. There was never an order to kill the Jews, ever. The plan was to deport them, not to exterminate them.
And a lot of people don't realize that toward the latter years, 44, 45 of World War II, everybody that was a man of legal age over there was in a uniform. And they needed, and you can call it slave labor, which it was, if you're not free to leave someplace and you're told you have to work. If you need something done, well, you were in one of these work camps is what it was. And it was to the advantage of the German government to keep these people alive and working because all their men were at war. So to say that you want to turn around and kill 6 million of your laborers is absolutely insane. It is. Tell you what, we've got about 5 callers holding here in queue. Let's take this break and we'll roll these calls quickly when we get back. We are back. Jim in Illinois, you're up next, sir.
John Deanna, hello. I'd like to quote Mike Rivero, all wars are bankers' wars. I found that very interesting that Eisenhower had these internment camps after the war or after World War II. I also find it interesting he was connected to putting down the Bonus Army under General MacArthur. And,
well, both of them were involved in that.
And so was George Patton. And actually, Major George Patton with his tanks went after those veterans there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm not a supporter of communism, fascism, or anything of that nature. I am more of a libertarian person. And, getting to the Bolsheviks, the bankers funded them right here from the U.S.
Absolutely,
you know?
They did.
And, you get to looking at this stuff, and here I was thinking Eisenhower, I kind of held him a little higher esteem. And same with Patton, and even MacArthur. But, I see these people, man, in history, they've done some deplorable things, and that was against our veterans of World War One, the Bonus Army.
Yeah.
And we even had troops firing on students in Kent State. I mean, this stuff has got to end.
It does. How much longer must this circus continue?
I'm out of here.
The deadly three-ring circus. Thanks for your call, Jim. Here's somebody we're both familiar with, Werner in New Brunswick, Canada. Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon, Diana, and good afternoon, John.
How you doing, Werner?
Hi, Werner. This is the second time I've talked to you today.
Yeah, I didn't make it to your show. So. But I don't know. I think any kind people who want to know the truth, you know, and are not afraid of the truth, they appreciate very much the work that what you are doing. But I want to throw out a few questions. Would you call that a very advanced aggressionary military force that started, that went into Russia with 800,000 horses?
Well, that was a preemptive strike on June the 8th, and it was 1941. And they did it because they had to. They had no choice. It was something that that they knew that Russia was or that the Soviets were going to attack. And had they done that, they would have taken over all of Europe. And so, so Germany was actually saving the rest of Europe. And if only Britain had gone with Germany, we wouldn't have communism today. Russia wouldn't be, would not have lived under communism, would not have lost those millions of people. And when you think of all of the millions that died during the Ukraine starvation, and it was after that that Roosevelt sanctioned, formally sanctioned or recognized the Soviet, regime. I mean, when you look at the history of this, you think, what in heaven's name was Roosevelt thinking? What was going on in their mind? And they chose to go with Stalin because Roosevelt was Jewish and because
Roosevelt was his real name.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And in my book, when I just sent my third book off to the printer last Thursday. And I talk about all of this. I talk about all the corruption and the horrible things that they did to Germany. I mean, it's just awful.
Yeah,
and to our own people.
It is.
And I talk about the Bonus Army. And you mentioned Patton. And he figured at the end of the war, okay, let's team up with Germany and let's go after the communists. So they killed him.
Yeah.
Murdered him.
Werner, I appreciate your call. We're running out of time, and I got a couple more callers in queue. Anything else quickly?
I just want to mention there, you said about 50 million the victims of communism.
Yeah.
Between the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe and China, it's at least 200 million.
Probably,
It's amazing, you know, and isn't it fascinating? Don't you find it fascinating, Werner, that, you know, we talk about the deaths surrounding World War II, and we never talk about Uncle Joe and his 50 million in Russia or Soviet Union, but
right.
We always talk about the 6 million Jews in Germany.
Right.
That's amazing. Werner, thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. You and I had a mutual friend down here. I've been to his house a couple of times down here in Texas. Gerhardt. Gerhardt came from Germany. I visited him and spent hour after hour talking with that man, and just a wonderful guy. And unfortunately, cancer claimed him. What, about 3 months ago?
Longer than that, I think.
Has it been?
To him a couple of days before he died.
Hmm.
He was Larry was over there, and they listened, and I got to say hi to him and goodbye to him.
Yeah.
We were good friends. I just and thank you for introducing us. It was just a delightful friendship that we had.
It was, and I'd been to the man's house and met his wife, and
mm-hmm.
just a wonderful man. And just like the trait that we talked about earlier about Germans, hard workers,
mm-hmm.
he built his entire ranch with his own hands. I'm a remarkable man. At any rate, another one. You know, we all have to shuffle off this mortal coil one day. And it's just sad to see people like this go.
Yes.
Frank in Las Vegas. Hello, Frank.
Yeah, hello, nice show. You know, Patton, he was born into a wealthy family, and all that land that UCLA sits on used to belong to the Pattons.
Huh.
And as far as, you know, the country that the Reich invaded, if you look at the map, they were just the country that surrounded Germany itself. It was just to protect from the Russians coming from the east and the Americans coming in from the west. And
sure.
He basically, Hitler basically kept all of Africa and Europe free from communism. If you think, if after World War One, you know, the communists were taking over Germany, they had to bring the soldiers home to stop the Russians from taking over the country from the inside. Mm-hmm. And if that would have happened, I definitely think France would have fell, Spain would have fell. So, you know, but as far as the Holocaust goes, it's called a Marxian victim. They ended up blaming. The Jews ended up blaming their enemies for what they did.
Exactly. Yep.
Called a Marxian victim.
All righty. Frank, thank you. Appreciate the contribution. One last caller here. Carrie in Florida. Hello.
Hello, folks. Great show. I like you, John, got to spend a little longer in Germany. I was 3.5 years in Berlin from 75 to 78, mm-hmm. and I got to talk to some elderly Germans. And then I did my own research. We stopped at the Elbe, Patton's army or whoever was in charge over there, stopped at the Elbe to let the Russians come in and butcher and rape Berlin. And I think this is despicable.
Yes. Well, Eisenhower stopped him. And
Eisenhower did. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Eisenhower was Baruch's man in Europe.
From what I understood from the poor German ladies that I talked to who were raped at age 6 But anyway, they were hoping Americans would get there first. And again, like Hungary, like Poland, we let them down. So that's all I had to say. Great
right.
show. Thank you very much for your research.
Thank you. I appreciate your call. Yeah, this is tough subject matter to cover, most assuredly. But Deanna, I've always held you in a special regard, as far as going in there and unrevising history, and I pay attention to those that have a passion for the truth and are willing to do the work, and I'll tell you what, I would put you up against anybody that wanted to roll in and claim that we're wing nuts and we're neo-Nazis. Folks, I'm not a neo-Nazi. I don't have Nazi flags flying in my house. You know, I'm not. I am an American. I don't hate Jews. I hate the Zionists. But, folks, we have to look at the world the way it really is and the way it was. If we cannot determine the truth moving into the future, we're damned well doomed to repeat it, aren't we? Deanna?
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And I don't hate anybody either, but I sure hate a lot of the things that they do.
I'm telling you. All right, Deanna Spingola, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful 2 hours.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
All right, ma'am. Thank you.
All righty.
See you on the airwaves. All right, folks. That'll do it for today. I was compelled to do that program, and we did. I can guarantee you will never hear that kind of programming on any other network. Folks, support the truth. Support the people that are out there that want this grand republic back without the lies, without the treachery. Thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
With financial uncertainty circling